All right, welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast. We're exploring how to take your faith beyond Sunday morning. This is Patrick Nosseroff. With me, as always, Pastor Dave Bowser.
How do you do, Patrick?
And Elise McCarter.
Still here, still pretty successful.
All right, so...
But now a gym bro.
Now a gym bro.
We have an announcement.
Do we?
We do.
I don't know about this announcement.
You actually do.
Yes. Do I?
Yeah, you do.
We are taking the month of June off.
Oh, yeah.
After today.
After this week. So we'll be taking a few weeks off.
Yeah.
We'll be back at the beginning of July.
It's our first break as a podcast.
Yeah.
In a lot of years.
Yeah.
It's been 8 years.
We've got some travel.
Oh my gosh.
It's close.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
We've got some stuff happening at the church.
We're actually going to make Elise keep recording because she hasn't been
just
doing it as long
myself.
As us. So
yeah.
She's going to do it solo.
Just come on in and record. Yeah.
Tune into my ramblings.
Sure.
I'm going to say all the stuff that they won't let me say.
Fortunately, she doesn't know how to upload it to the website.
Right.
So we're pretty safe.
That is, yeah. Yeah.
And that's not because I'm a girl.
No, that's just because you don't know.
In fairness, I
just
barely
I'm stupid.
Know.
Yeah.
I do the same thing every time, and I'm still not 100% I'm doing it correct.
Yeah.
So
every time we were like,
that's
did
the confidence
that work?
We're looking for.
Yeah.
So, anyway, yeah, we're taking some time off. So you'll not hear from us for a couple of weeks.
Yeah. So back in July.
That's right.
So next week, if there's no podcast, don't
email
don't
us.
Worry. Don't fret.
Email Elise.
It's going to be okay.
No, don't email me.
They don't know your email.
If you're desperate to hear our voices, there are plenty of archives.
There are.
Call us up.
Close to 400 episodes in the archives.
Close to 400. Call us up. We'll just chat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
He means like bring up an old episode.
Oh,
no,
okay.
I mean you can call us up and we'll just chat. Yeah.
You can text
call Patrick.
Me. Yeah.
You can text. Okay.
Yeah. I will not be answering the phone.
That sounds like a general life rule for you.
It is.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right, well, let's get to our news story. Do you know what looks maxing is?
I do.
Yeah.
Is
obviously,
it?
I'm doing it.
She's going to the gym like 8 times a week. I mean, is it what it sounds like? Like you're just trying to like maximize your looks to a very, I don't know, artificial standard
pretty
of what
much,
it should be?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, yeah, people out there, yeah.
Is it like
doing whatever they can to maximize the way they look?
Is it like body modification or is it just like?
I think it can be.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sometimes.
All right.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, lots of maxing is now a thing.
Maxing. Okay.
Sleep maxing.
Height maxing.
Height maxing.
Yeah.
Is that different than just like standing up straight?
Yeah. So there are men that wear like high heel shoes now. So
lifts.
Like,
oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well.
Do I need to start doing that? Is that a thing? Is that
need is relative.
Okay, fair enough.
I'm do you want to be 6 feet tall?
I have always had a bit of a chip on my shoulder that I didn't make 6 foot. I came out at 5'11", and I've always kind of wanted to, you know,
at least
hit
you're
that six
honest
mark.
About it.
Yeah.
I'm not even close. So, I mean, I have to
if I could
stilts.
Get rid of that chip on the shoulder, I might get
it. Like so. Herman Munster's shoes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So,
you're
I mean,
like 5'7", right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, no, I mean,
5'7" is a nice height.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with 5'7".
Oh, man, it's not 6 feet.
That's not.
It's not 6 feet.
So it is what it is. You know, nothing you knew about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At what point in your career did you say, I'm never going to be tall enough to play in the NBA?
I mean, pretty early on.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah.
Yeah, me too.
There was a brief period where, like, I grew before other people. So I was like, okay, maybe I'm going to be tall. Like, maybe I've got. And then by freshman year, it's like everybody else was catching up to me.
Yeah.
Like, I'm done. Okay. Like, this is what it's going to be now. Yeah.
Oh, well.
Well, don't worry. There's a new trend.
Okay, what are we going to max now?
Poop maxing.
Poop maxing.
I think I've been doing that for years, but go ahead and tell me what's going on.
It's the hot girl trend. Hot girl summer.
Hot girl.
Yeah.
Poop maxing.
Okay.
So, this is from news.com AU.
Australia.
Yeah.
Our friends.
Oh, they are upside down there, so, you know.
Yeah. It's harder to
all
poop.
The blood's rushing to their head all the time.
They're pooping against gravity.
Yeah. Right. It's
a lot of work.
Right.
It's more, yeah. It's got to be kind of violent to get that out.
Yeah.
Yeah,
a lot of empathy for Australians.
This is from Eleanor Wickland, and she said her dad is a gastroenterologist, and he told them about she was going to write about poop maxing.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I wonder how the human race survived so long before poop maxing became a thing.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
He didn't say, don't do that. That's a terrible idea.
No. Poop maxing is exactly what it sounds like.
I'm not clear what it sounds like, so I'm going to need more information.
It is making sure you have the healthiest and best poop possible.
Okay, so it's not pooping more.
I mean, it might be.
It might be pooping more, but it's not just like, I want to poop more. It's
it's not like
I want to poop healthfully.
It's not like Guinness record opportunity
right,
here.
Yeah,
because wanting to poop more, That's a Taco Bell thing.
You know, yeah,
I can achieve this.
Yeah, right. Or a tapeworm, maybe? I don't know.
Better.
I think you poop less with those.
Do you?
Because I think that the tapeworm eats.
It eats all your stuff. I think so, okay. Yeah.
Wanting to poop better probably is something different.
That's not a Taco Bell thing, that's for sure.
That's
yeah.
So this is really like eat healthier.
This is going to be the right proportions of fiber and water intake
all the things,
and bowel relaxation. So and
yeah.
Bowel relaxation? You need.
Yeah, like you don't want to strain.
Well, also, okay. It's also about.
I mean, I guess
there's a lot of things here. One, eating. Two, accessories.
Accessories. Stuff. We can buy stuff.
I don't want to know about those.
Every good hobby needs accessories.
Now, all the maxers on the gram or the TikTok, they're not
that
just.
That is an Instagram I do not want to follow. Mm.
They're not doing it just to do it.
No,
they're
of course
doing
not.
It to, they're selling stuff. They're
of course.
They're influencers.
Yes. Yeah.
So you got to. Sanitary sheets to put on public toilets.
Okay.
What?
Travel size odor sprays.
All right.
Then you gotta like go over what you're eating. So you got there's the certified poopers on the Instagram. So yeah.
What certification? who's handing this out?
Yeah. Yes. Is there?
Do I just get to get
this
a little
like an online class?
Yeah.
Do you
say
I just
say
get
like,
the blue check mark and say I'm a certified pooper now?
Hey, I'm full of crap. here's one. Hey, Hallie, you can follow her on Instagram with her poop maxer salads, poop maxer grocery hauls, poopy meal preps, and one clip titled "Poop with Me."
Poop with me.
Nope.
She's putting a headband on. It's about to get serious.
I do not want to.
Okay. Well, yeah. I mean, if you need a headband.
Hair back, yeah.
Sweating might happen.
Right.
Yeah, maybe, I mean, like hot yoga. It's a hot poop.
Right.
You know, I need to not just.
I'm all for like eating a healthier diet.
Mm-hmm.
That seems like a good thing.
Yeah.
She also got a poop purse.
Nope. Is that where she keeps her spray and her.
Her herbal teas, her wipes, her instant savory oatmeal for fiber on the go.
Do you need to call it a poop purse?
Yeah.
Couldn't you just put that in a regular bag?
Right. Maybe in case of emergency.
Right. I'm thinking, so like I go to a nutritionist and it is amazing how much time we have spent talking about bowel movements and what creates good ones. But like I've never thought to think of it in terms of like, I'm going to my poop specialist, you know, even though.
Well, you're not. You're going to a nutritionist.
Nutritionist.
That's your problem.
Right. But it's very heavily weighted towards bowel movements. So
maybe you're
just a rebranding.
Maybe your nutritionist is an aspiring poop maxer.
Maybe. Like I just put like having fiber on the go. That's not a bad thing. That's a good thing. Right. Like
sure.
Flushable wipes. Great. You like to be comfortable.
Don't
if you're
flush flushable wipes. Flushable wipes are always bad.
It's a scam. Yeah.
Sure.
They're always bad for the plumbing. Don't flush flushable wipes.
But I think maybe they're just rebranding or branding a little bit heavily on the poop part as opposed to the nutrition part.
All right. Here's what she says in one of her videos. I like to hit my butthole first thing in the morning with a poop juice.
All right. All right. Really? We had to read that.
What a quote. Yeah. That's in the news.
I don't feel like that was a quote that anyone ever needed to hear.
First thing in the morning with the poop juice?
Nope. I don't want to hear any more about it. We're going to move.
That's a smoothie.
I don't want to hear.
Do you have a recipe
any more
for
about
us?
It.
Kale, banana, and spirulina?
Spirulina.
I mean, yeah, that'll move
spirulina,
it along.
Spirulina, yeah. Banana has the opposite effect though.
Yeah, I would agree.
It's a binder.
Yeah.
But I think when it's in your like it's yeah.
It'll stop you up.
It has the stuff that moves through. Banana does not stop you up.
Sometimes it does. You okay?
I don't know.
You got a little twitch.
Yeah. Poop maxing did something to me.
Yes.
All right. Are you interested in joining the poop maxing trend?
I've clearly already established that I do not. I will eat healthy. I'll try to do that.
Yeah.
I'm probably not.
I probably won't do that.
I probably will not carry fiber
commit,
on the go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Going out of my, like saying I have to have fiber with me at all times does not seem like something that's going to happen.
Yeah. I think the looks.
But I also feel like I have a pretty healthy regular system already. Like, I don't think I need to carry fiber.
You heard it
me.
Here first. Yeah. Yeah.
I have plenty of fiber.
Yeah.
Exactly the right amount.
Touch you.
maybe you could, you know, this is preachable.
Yeah.
You know,
yes.
Yeah. I think, look, all looks maxers, sleep maxers, mm-hmm. height maxers, poop maxers. Let's yeah. try therapy maxing. All right, let's try yeah, that out.
Anything but going to therapy.
Let's try that. Yeah. Let's just try being a normal human being maxing. Like, let's just, how about that? Just
mid maxing.
Yeah. Just like doing your life yeah. normal maxing. Yeah. Yeah. I think, do you have a squatty potty? Maybe that's the question here.
I do not have a squatty
potty. I have a Japanese toilet, though.
Ooh.
And it's my favorite possession.
You would, if that house fire, that's what
I'm grabbing the Japanese yeah, yes. toilet. Yeah.
It's like bolted down.
Yeah, I'd figure it out. I basically hate to travel now because I don't have that with me.
Okay. You need the portable version of your drug.
Yeah. It's a gateway drug to being very particular about how you go to the bathroom.
Okay. So.
Fair warning.
Is it one of those that like sings to you and everything like that?
It doesn't sing to me, but it's got the different water jets and the heated seat and the air dryer and the different temperature controls.
I have had the heated seat before and did not know that it was going to be heated the first time that I sat down. That is an alarming situation.
Because you feel like somebody just left.
Or
was there for a long time.
You peed on yourself.
Yeah. What just happened? Yeah.
Did you pee maxed?
I don't know.
If you're so not ready, much, it overflows.
If you're not ready for it, I'm just saying. Yeah. The heated
it's nice to know ahead of time. Yeah.
I just wanted some warning. Yeah.
Okay. Let's get into hard parts of the Bible, maxim.
Child sacrifice maxing. Yeah. All right. Yeah.
Yes. All right. We are going to talk about Genesis 22. Mm. This is a story in the Bible of Abraham and Isaac.
Okay.
This is definitely, if you are a reader of the Bible, it's relatively early. If you started reading the Bible, you're like, what is happening here?
Just getting into it. Yeah.
Like it's not the first time that you've gone, what is happening
but
here?
But it's probably the most, it's
like the second or third.
It's coming in hot.
Yeah. It's well known. Yeah.
So in the story, I think it helps to have some context.
Let's do it.
Because I think context. This is going to help maybe as we try to resolve this on some level. Abraham is married to this woman, or actually Abram is married to this woman, Sarai. Yes.
Yeah.
And they changed their names to Abraham and Sarah.
Right. Because God tells them to.
Because God tells them to, yeah.
They're name max.
They're old. Yeah, they're old, and God is promising them that they're going to have a kid.
Yes.
First they try, what about Abraham and servant girl?
Yeah.
And
they don't trust God to provide the child through Sarai.
So they have a kid that way. It does not go well for the servant girl and that child.
Yeah, that's Ishmael. Yep.
Ishmael. So they get sent away, and then Abraham does have Isaac.
Yes.
And well, through Sarah. Abraham and Sarah have Isaac.
Yeah.
All right. And then when Isaac is older, and we're not quite sure how old.
Yeah, young boy-ish, but older, could be like old enough to walk and
probably
talk.
Probably, anything but like 5 or 6 to 15. Yeah. I don't know.
We don't know.
Somewhere in that range. God comes to Abraham in a dream and says, you need to sacrifice Isaac to me.
Yep.
And Abraham's like, okay. Mm-hmm. You know, so he gets Isaac,
mm-hmm.
loads Isaac up with wood,
mm-hmm.
and they walk up this mountain. And along the way, Isaac's like, hey, we've got wood. What are we going to sacrifice?
Yeah.
And Abraham's like, you'll find out. You know, like,
I think he says God's going to provide the sacrifice.
Yes. Yes. And they get there. Abraham builds the altar.
Yep.
Lays out the wood.
Yep.
Puts Isaac on the altar.
Presumably ties him down.
Gets out a knife.
Yep.
And God says, stop.
Yeah.
You have proven your like love and commitment to me. Go sacrifice that goat that's like.
Got its horn stuck in the thicket.
Yeah, that's right next to them. And so they untie Isaac. They put the goat on the thing. They sacrifice.
Walk and Isaac's like, Dad, I've been yelling
Isaac
about that
like,
goat.
What just happened?
Yeah. Yeah. And then they walk back down the mountain together.
Mm-hmm.
And they never talk about it again. to the Bible. I mean, right. Who knows that this came up often.
Sure.
Like, hey, Dad.
I would bring it up every day.
Remember that time? Remember?
Yeah. I would literally never shut up about it.
Well, and he's like, Dad, I really would like a PlayStation 5 for Christmas. Right. Remember when you almost sacrificed me?
You were willing to do it. I saw it.
Here it is. Mm-hmm. So, it's an odd story.
It is.
It's a difficult story. I mean, I found it difficult before I had kids, and now I find it near impossible to process and understand what is God doing here, right? Like, why is God asking for something seemingly insane?
Yeah.
Like, This is crazy.
And contrary to what we know and understand of who God declares God's self to be in mm-hmm. other yeah. parts of scripture. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is nutters. What do we do with this?
Yeah.
I've got a couple things or ways that we can kind of address this.
Mm-hmm.
But let me ask you first, how have you heard this like explained or addressed in church or Bible study or Sunday school or something like that?
Elise, have you heard this?
Because I feel like you're going to have this. Yeah. I mean, I think it's just the circles that I was in when I was hearing about this a lot were very just like, oh, well, it's just about devotion to God, right? Like, obviously, you have to be prepared to give God whatever he asks for, mm-hmm. up to and including your child, right?
Yeah. Which I don't think is a wrong reading of the story, but I do think it's an incomplete reading of the story.
Yeah.
I think it's a reading that focuses on this one little piece of the story without looking at the broader narrative that's happening with Abraham, right? Like, mm-hmm. the story of Abraham up to this point is God has chosen Abraham, who was Abram at the beginning, right? God's chosen Abram and said, you know, follow me. I'm going to give you this land. I'm going to give you offspring. I'm going to give you this blessing. And Abram continues to do things his own way. Right, like from the very start, Abram's called out. It says, "Leave all your family behind," but his nephew comes with him. And his nephew is Lot. Lot famously gets into a wide variety of trouble. Right, a few verses later than that, God finally kind of has him in the land, and then there's a famine, and so Abram, without any instruction from God, just leaves the land and goes down to Egypt because he's worried about the famine. Right, so over and over, including the story with Hagar and Ishmael, right? Like, you know, Abram takes the matters into his own hands, does not trust what God is going to provide, and says, I'm going to, and that goes terribly, right? It's bad for Hagar. It's bad for Ishmael. It's bad for Abraham and Sarah in this relationship, right? All of it is just bad and outside of what God intends for the group. And so that it is a trajectory for Abraham of finally coming to this place of the thing I really don't want to do. I'm finally in a place of trusting that God knows better than I do. Like, that, like if you look at the whole trajectory of the story, it's I have screwed up over and over and over. It has never worked out in my favor. I'm finally to a place of I'm going to trust God above my own desires. And it's really hard for us to comprehend that, right? And yeah, I'm with you, Patrick. Like the notion of having to sacrifice my son or either of my children, like it's awful. I don't want to think about that. I don't want to think about God asking me to do that. But I do think there's a trajectory for Abraham that matters, that he's finally to the place of I understand that God's plan is bigger than my own. And I understand that I can't comprehend everything that God's going to do.
Yeah.
I also think that there's a lot of elements in which Abraham trusts that he can do this and that God is going to protect Isaac. Like, I think there are elements of the story that point to that, mm-hmm. but we don't have to get into that yet. We can save that for a little bit further down the pod.
We do have one bit of context that comes much later in the Bible, in the book of Hebrews, that we will kind of get into. Yeah.
So. I'm also okay with there being more archaic elements in...
Sure.
in the Old Testament than I am in the New Testament, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
We're talking about...
If Jesus looked over at Peter and was like, Peter, go sacrifice your son.
Right. So, like, it's...
No, it's good to find Peter.
It's different contextually.
Yeah, sure.
Like, this is the dawn of civilization, right?
Yeah.
So, like, things are more archaic and seem to be just more, like, blunt, right?
Yeah. And there does appear to be some intentionally countercultural elements to the story, mm-hmm. you know, to run up against... other ancient Near East cultures that would have encouraged or even employed child sacrifice to mm-hmm. appease gods. And so there is definitely an element of like writing against that of like, if you're hearing this as someone from Mesopotamia, you're like, oh yeah, that's what God's do that. God's demand your child. And then all of a sudden, oh wait, this God provided a different, like, I mean, there's a surprise element to that we lose because we're not in a culture where it's like, oh yeah, Billy's going to go be a sacrifice to the God next week. And Billy, you know, just does, yes, that's what I'm going to, right? I mean, I don't know how it worked. I don't know what happened to Billy, but.
Yeah. Obviously, if any of us had a friend or acquaintance that was like, hey, I think God is telling me to sacrifice my child,
mm-hmm.
we would not look at that as a testament of faith.
No.
We would look at it as a testament of insanity.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
That's crazy town. Like, you are obviously hearing something from not God, but from psychosis.
Right.
You know, like, that is what you're experiencing right now. And yet, in this story that, you know, we read and trust, and on some level, God is working, it is difficult to understand. So, obviously, the first one that I've heard is, this is a test.
Yes.
And Abraham is here to pass the test.
Yep.
The test of faith to move forward. And so... And that's not an unreasonable reading. The
mm-hmm.
section, I believe, opens with God tested Abraham.
Mm-hmm.
And so here's a test. it's kind of weird because, like, presumably God knows how the test is going to go. Mm-hmm. You know, like, mm-hmm. he knows if Abraham will or will not do this before doing it because God exists outside of time.
Mm-hmm. That's what I understand.
Yeah. Yeah. But so, yeah, the test of does Abraham trust God? Do you think, is it even possible would God test someone like this today?
Would God offer us opportunities to be tested and demonstrate faithfulness? Yeah, I think so. Would God do that by inviting us to sacrifice our firstborn child? I don't think so.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any situation in which someone could come to me and say, I think that I'm being tested by God to sacrifice my child, in which I would say, that lines up with how I experience God in the world, right? Because because even here in the story, the ancient context is so different from the context that we live in. You know, the context, this was not a weird story at the time. Like, it was weird because God provided an alternative path. It wasn't weird because God demanded this, right? And so I think, you know, for our context, how is God testing us in ways that fit the context that work in our life? Yeah, I think there are opportunities for us probably every day in which God gives us opportunities to choose faithfulness or to choose our own path. And the key is that, you know, even for Abraham, these tests of faith were never about condemnation, right? They were always about how is Abraham choosing to come closer to or farther away from this relationship that God is trying to establish. But God is always right there with Abraham, right? I mean, so if a failure for this test would have been Abraham saying, God, I'm not going to sacrifice my son. Like, that would have been failure, but God still would have been right there with Abraham and would have carried on. And maybe there would have been another story. In my reading of the story, Isaac was never going to die.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Which does make it palatable, I guess. It makes it if my trust is in God always knew that Isaac wasn't going to die. And I trust also that whatever therapy Isaac needed from this whole experience, God provided for him and he was able to.
Yeah. We're Isaac how many thousands of years pre-therapists?
Listen, Isaac goes on to have a pretty solid relationship with God. It's messy, but so are a lot of people's relationships, right? And so, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Feels like Isaac figured it out.
He's all right.
He came to terms with it.
Yeah. I printed out a few of my point, like things that we kind of right, talk about. I'm actually going to skip number two because we'll come back to that at the end.
Because we already poop max. We don't need to do number two.
No. Number two is plenty interesting. We'll just
that was
back
way
to
better
it
than yeah, you yeah, gave me credit
number
for.
Number two is plenty interesting.
Yes. Yeah, we did
as all, per yes the internet.
Yeah, you got to hit it first thing in the morning with a poop juice. Yeah.
That's right.
All right. We're hitting number three. This is actually an anti-child sacrifice interpretation.
Okay.
And I think that you kind of hit, we've kind of been hitting that plenty here. The climax of the story is stop and not the sacrifice.
Right.
That the idea of like, God is not like those other gods.
Yes.
And so we're hitting the same beats as other gods, but God is saying, no, we're not going to do, this is not what this is going to look like.
Yeah.
The complication is God's the last, right? Like, you know, feel like we could have gone, you know, if that is the goal, maybe God could be like, hey, we're not going to sacrifice children at all.
Right.
We don't need to get close.
Right. You know, like maybe like a Ten Commandments style tablet. Sure. You know?
we like a good tablet in the Old Testament. Yeah.
Okay. Number four here. We got, so Soren Kierkegaard.
Mm-hmm. Who?
he's a theologian slash philosopher.
You knew that. You didn't even blink.
Yeah, Kierkegaard. Soren Kierkegaard.
Soren?
Soren. I think it's S-O-R-R-E-N, but it's got one of those weird O's with like a line through it and the E with something other. It's Kierkegaard. I can't spell that one.
There you go.
Oh, yeah, that guy.
Kierkegaard.
Yes. I think it's from the 1800s, if I'm remembering correctly.
So he wrote a whole book on this called Fear and Trembling, basically on this story. And he's exploring this like Abraham entering in a faith paradox. Right away, God promised Isaac, God commands sacrifice. Both of these things seem impossible. How do I do this? And I think the idea is Abraham is entering in this faith paradox with fear and trembling in the midst of this. And I think the book, I think I was supposed to read it in college. I definitely did not. But, you know, I think is like the
solid recommendation.
What do we do when we encounter faith paradoxes?
Yes.
Things that seem contradictory to oneself.
Yeah.
And I think that sometimes this is going to happen, even like God loves me and I am a sinner are is somewhat of a faith paradox. Or, or God loves humanity and the evils of humanity are so prevalent is a bit of a paradox, right? Like, how do we navigate those types of things?
Yeah, or for Kierkegaard, I mean, he was writing in the early 1800s. So, I mean, war was pretty prevalent. And, you know, this was pre-World War I, things like that. But, I mean, it was certainly something that was common in people's understanding of, can I be a pacifist and serve in my community? Like, how do I defend myself? How do I defend my family when God commands me not to kill? Like, that, I mean, that's a paradox that people had to wrestle with and still have to wrestle with. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. We also have one thing that some Jewish and Jewish rabbis emphasize that maybe some Christian scholars not, is that Isaac is a willing participant throughout the story. That Isaac is walking up, carrying the stuff, that sometimes they're in some Jewish rabbinic traditions, he is a knowingly submitting to this sacrifice.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a Jewish rabbi. That's step one.
What?
Right, I know. Mind blown. But there are, I mean, there are these elements of what we call midrash, right? And the midrash is where rabbis have come along and kind of like expanded the story outside of the story that's just on the page, right? So you get a piece like this and you write the midrash of like, what was the conversation like for Isaac and Abraham? And like, what was the conversation as they walked up to them? Because all we hear is, where's the sacrifice going to come from? God's going to provide it. Well, what else were they talking about? And the midrash can like explore some of that. And yeah, I think there's room for, I think there's room for Jewish thought and even for Christian thought to note Isaac's trust in his father. I think that's a reasonable thing. Like, yeah, I'm going to, but I think it's a really tightrope to walk, right? Because I think that particularly in a lot of Christian circles that we see now, I think that could be easily turned into an abusive situation where it's, oh, you have to trust blindly no matter what. And I don't think that's the intention of the story either.
Yeah. He was also a child, so that one's a little bit tricky, I think.
I mean, but he's a child in the ancient world. He's not a child like we think of a child now. Like, I mean,
and again, we're not sure his age, you know. Yeah. Could be.
It's an ancient text. I'm not talking to a five-year-old now and saying you just have to, right? Like, it's just, it's a different context enough that I can understand where they're drawing those kinds of comparisons.
I think
whether or not we agree with them, I can understand where they're drawing them from.
I think, and then finally here, is this would be kind of the parallels to Jesus. And I think that this is something that is kind of interesting as well. I mean, obviously, father sacrificing son is something that is going to be a parallel to Jesus on some level. I mean, we went over kind of hard parts of the Bible of like, what does the cross actually mean? How does Jesus get there? Is this God sacrificing Jesus? Is this Jesus dying at the hands of the state? The Bible is not like crystal clear exactly what is going on in those types of things. But at least we have kind of like, we have a father, we have a son, we have a sacrifice, only there is no stop. You know, like that part of the story is removed in kind of the Christian version.
Right.
And I think that does have kind of like this interesting, Abraham is the beginning of kind of like God's revelation to humanity, the beginning of like what faithfulness kind of looks like. And Jesus is the culmination of that.
Yeah. And so, ultimately God will provide the sacrifice.
Yeah. Yeah. That
God provided the ram and God will provide.
Yeah. That we're kind of hitting this so that it echoes clearest in Jesus, I think is interesting narratively. Like, I think like as a narrative structure, that's very powerful that, and if you go back and listen to I'm sure you all remember clearly like our what happens on the cross.
Listen to it on repeat before bed.
For me, the cross is I see it as the once and final sacrifice. And here we have like that imagery so clearly like connecting to my, in my mind.
Sure.
Like this is a clear like fulfillment of Abraham and Isaac. It's not going to make the Abraham and Isaac story better or less hard.
Yeah.
But at least it's like, there is that element to it, you know, like that it is pointing to something to come, only without the stop.
Yeah. And I do think it's okay to like, you can walk away from these stories and whatever explanation you land on or don't land on, right? You can walk away from it and say, the story is just hard and I just don't like the story. Like, that's an okay place to be. What's difficult is to get like, oh, well, I'm going to reject God entirely because of this one story and God made this request that I don't fully understand. Like, I think you're making some leaps there to reject God based on this one story after all the other stories that demonstrate God in a different light and a different perspective. So I would just at least encourage you to read the fullness of God rather than just saying this is all God is this one story.
Yeah. Do any of these resonate with you, Elise, as kind of like an explanation or understanding?
Seems like she really liked the one where Isaac was a willing participant.
I did not like that one very much. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, like I was saying, I understanding it more through a lens of like it was an archaic time frame and in context of what other religions and other pantheons of gods were, you know, requiring or how they were approached in worship at that time frame is an interesting way to do that. I think it's helpful, right? To think about this is like the antithesis of what worship looked like at that point in time, right? I think it raises some interesting questions for me about why a sacrifice is required at all. That's kind of a thought process that I have when I think about this, right? A little deeper is why sacrifice at all? Like, why? Because something still died, something was still sacrificed, right? You know, again, archaic time frame.
Yeah.
So, but just kind of an interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think about it.
The only reason the Jewish people don't sacrifice now is because there's not a temple. I mean, if there were still a temple, they would continue to be, I mean, the temple is destroyed, and the temple is the only place you could do sacrifices after that period. So that's the only reason that it kind of fell out of the Jewish tradition. I mean, Christianity obviously felt.
I don't think it's fair to say the only reason, you know, that's been 2,000 years. If they built a temple, they might not just start sacrificing.
I mean, no construction is slow, but.
I would say, maybe not the only, but I think it's a primary. Like, they were doing sacrifices up until the temple was destroyed.
Yeah.
And the reason that the sacrifices do not continue is because you can't do sacrifices outside of a temple. I mean, that's what it's pointing in Jewish history. That's what it's pointing to. So, I mean, whether or not that's still the reason now, I think that was definitely a driver at the time. I mean, they could have just said, oh, we're going to do this over here now, and they didn't because that was the holy place where the temple was.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it feels kind of like even like narratively in the Bible, it kind of like dies out, like the imagery of sacrifice.
It does, yeah.
Like, yeah. It's a big deal early on, and then like as you kind of progress in, it just is not as much of a big deal.
I guess I wonder where it came from originally. Like, what is the genesis, if you will, of that thought process of sacrifice equals how we connect to God in worship, right?
Yeah.
And then obviously it tapers off. It seems more like in line with as civilization grows and progresses, right?
I think it tapers off within Christianity because Jesus fulfills the sacrifice. And so the argument there is that we don't need to make a sacrifice anymore because Jesus has done that.
And this is why, that's how I see the cross.
Right.
It narratively fulfills it beyond it just kind of dies off. Like we end up with that is the closing of that chapter. In a sense, in my mind.
Well, I mean, I think across religions, though, sacrifice also dies out.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, like, there is some cultural shift as well.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Teens these days, they don't want to sacrifice anybody.
Some people's kids, you know.
God, yeah.
So lazy.
You know, yeah. It's probably woke or something.
All right.
Gracious.
All right, well, there's one more piece of the Bible that does provide some context, maybe. And this is in the book of Hebrews.
Mm-hmm.
So this is after Jesus. So we're going from the first book of the Bible to
one of the last.
And it's adding a bit of context to this story. Or it's saying it has knowledge of what's going on here.
Yeah.
The author of Hebrews, who we do not know. And in the midst of this section in Hebrews, the author is like going on through like the stories of faith in the Old Testament and all the things that people did by faith. And it hits Abraham by faith was willing to sacrifice Isaac. And in the midst of that, it says, Abraham believed that God would raise Isaac from the dead.
Hmm.
And like, that is the context that's there. Abraham, that it's adding that part of it, that Abraham is trusting God is going to raise Isaac from the dead. And I think this one is kind of interesting because Isaac is not just a child. Mm-hmm. He is a promised child. Mm-hmm. And not just like, you're going to get a kid. It's like, through your kid, all nations will be blessed, right? Like, and your descendants will number the stars in the sky. And so I think it provides a context of if Abraham trusts, those things are true. And they can only happen through Isaac, not through Ishmael, not through Sarah's going to have another kid.
Yeah.
This is not the end of the story.
Right.
There is going to be more with Isaac. It's an and so I think that is kind of interesting that I don't think God would ever ask anybody to sacrifice a child, because your child is not promised in the same way that Isaac is promised in God, by God. I think if God says, Abraham, go sacrifice Sarah, I don't think he would necessarily think that that's God talking.
Mm.
But I think they've had conversations about Isaac many times to this point.
Sure.
And I think trusting in, like, God is going to do this thing through Isaac, and it's going to happen. Death cannot stop that.
Yeah.
At least has an element of faithfulness, and in some ways, I'm not saying like beauty, but like maybe an aspect of it, of that kind of trust that I think is still kind of there. But it is, doesn't make the story easier, an easier pill to swallow, but at least adds some level there.
Well, even narratively within the Genesis story, right? Abraham has a couple of servants who are walking along with them, you know, and then they stop. And Abraham says, okay, Isaac and I, we're going to go on up the mountain to do our sacrifice. You guys stay here. And then Abraham says, and we will return to you on, I don't know, however many days.
Sure.
And so there is an element that people read into that, we will return to you, of Abraham establishing, like, he knows that Isaac's going to come back. Like, he doesn't know how. He just knows that Isaac's going to come back. He doesn't know what's going to happen and what that's going to look like. But Abraham seems to be leaning into this. We're going to go do this thing, and we are going to come back to you, even though all we know is that he's supposed to go kill Isaac, in which case you wouldn't necessarily say we to return.
Yeah.
Unless you didn't want Isaac to know. Isaac's we'll like, be right back, wink.
Yeah. And I will be back. Yeah. And Isaac's like, what, Dad?
What? Yeah. Did you mean we?
Yeah. Yeah. So again, I'm not quite sure what, like, this is not probably like, hey, let's do a Bible study. Let's crack open Genesis 22 with like a beginning crowd and like, let's explore this. I think this is kind of advanced stuff to the point of like, I'm not sure there is a good answer of like why this happens in the Bible. I think there may be better answers, but I wouldn't necessarily walk away of like, oh, I see it clearly. This is something that makes sense to me. And I think it's okay to walk away from this and other passages and be like, I don't get it, and I don't even like it.
Yeah. I do think that's why people lean into the, this is what you were saying from the beginning, at least, right? That this is a demonstration of faithfulness to God. That it's just, because that feels cleanest.
Yeah.
And so you can
just
say, oh, it's about devotion. I have to be willing to, and then you can move on. And you don't have to think about any of the other complicated stuff that comes with it. Like, I think that's the appeal of that position.
Well, and all the people who teach those types of things can also, we can also lie to ourselves to say like, oh yeah, I would do that. I just never have to.
Yeah.
And
I
also,
I would sacrifice my son.
If God asked me to, I wouldn't.
Of course.
Yeah, but like, God also asks us to like, you know, care for the stranger and the immigrant. And we seem to have a pretty hard time saying, I don't know about that, God. Yeah. All right. I don't have anything more here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anything else, Elise?
Mm-mm.
This is good. I like this. So we'll be back next month, which I can do now. We'll be back with the new Hard Things in the Bible.
Yeah, we will
the
start.
Beginning of July.
Right at the beginning of July, first Monday in July, we'll be back.
Back to back, Hard Things in the Bible. So if you liked this episode, you can find all of our stuff at BeyondSundayPodcast.com. And of course, shoot us an email. Even in the time that we're away, you can shoot us an email at BeyondSundayPodcast@gmail.com.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week. More. But back. Whoa, not next week.
Next month.
Next month.
Holy moly.
Look with out. More Beyond Sunday.
We're going to forget how to do this in a month.
We barely know how to do it now.
Right.
Not much to forget.